This week's edition of Sundays with Shep originally aired April 8th, 2012. And here we go again. It's time for another edition of Sundays with Shep here on the Lakeshore, 89.1 FM. I'm Ryan Priest, and every week at this time, we dig through the radio archives of Hammond's inimitable raconteur, Gene Shepherd, in search of classic tales from Northwest Indiana and beyond. And today, we have a little bit of a Hoosier Hysteria edition. With the NCAA championships wrapping up this past weekend, congratulations to the University of Kentucky. We thought we'd give you a little bit of Shep's take on basketball, and especially basketball in the state of Indiana. In this program from April 8th, 1976, Shep sets some New Yorkers straight on the idea that basketball is a New York street game, as he describes in great detail the passion that Hoosiers have for basketball, and especially high school basketball. He lays out the whole Indiana State High School basketball tournament. And of course, 1976, this was before class basketball. So the picture being painted is one of Indiana's classic one-class basketball tournament. Also, Shep has some time to describe a conversation with his mother and how a soldering iron traumatized her life, which leads to his thoughts on some aha moments. We've all had them. So here we go, back to April 8th, 1976, as originally aired on WOR in New York. It's Gene Shepherd on Sundays with Shep.
Faucets gather no acorns. That's really profound. That makes you really think. Leaking faucets gather no acorns. Tonight's program is dedicated to salutes to great living Americans. Tonight we're saluting Sherry Henry, a great living American.
You ain't heard nothing yet. Nothing. Come on, come on, come on, you guys. Come on, come on. Come on. I feel the need to have my sinuses cleaned up. Let's hear it. Blow it out. For truth and liberty and mankind. For all of suffering humanity. Blow it, blow it, blow it! I say blow it! Oh, man, you're doing it. I can hear it. It's happening. You're doing it, man. You're saying it. You're saying it. Come on, come on. Here you go. You'll do it. You'll do it. I know it. Come on. I'm behind you. Once more. Let's go. Head up, boy. Oh, that was good. That starts us off right, don't it, huh?
Forever blowing bubbles, pretty bubbles in the air. La da da dee, dee 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 dee.
You know, there used to be an old theory that that your whole life was formed by something that frightened your mother before you were born. Did you ever hear that expression? Well, it is true. You know, I it's very discouraging to find out it's true. Very, very discouraging. Here, just a couple of weeks ago, see, I'm on a telephone, and I'm talking through Ma Bell's tremendous system, all the way back to the great, vast, inverted bowl of midnight called the Midwest. And I got my mother on the other end of the line, see, and I said, Ma, how are you? Oh, okay. Is everything all right out there? Yes. You ever have a vague feeling that anybody you have, any relative that you ever talk to on the phone, is veiling something? They're not quite telling you the whole truth. I mean, they just imply this, especially if it's a mother you're talking to. Because all mothers feel vaguely cheated that you're no longer this little tiny tot sitting there eating oatmeal. Well, you know the old expression that kittens are really cute, but cats are another ballgame. You heard it, right? Well, that's true of kids. I mean, kids are really cute, but it's these, clunky people you find walking up and down 6th Avenue spitting on your shoes. Each one of them was a cute, cuddly little baby at one time, you know, sitting there saying things like goo, goo, you know, da-da, and eating cream of wheat and all that sort of thing. And now, what do you got? A bunch of mean-looking people walking around bopping each other, you know, shoving each other out of the way. You learn all about that if you've ever tried to get on a bus at a certain point in the rush hour in Manhattan. I mean, little old ladies who look like Mary Worth out of the comics will knock you right down to your knees, you know, tromp on you, wearing track shoes. You can't figure out. And everybody in the world was once a little kitten. Everybody. Now, I said to my mother, I said, Mom, I said, you're not telling me the truth. It just doesn't sound like it. What do you mean? I said, is everything all right? Yes. That slight hesitation. I said, come on, Ma, what is it? Well, you haven't written, you know. Oh, come on, Ma, for crying out loud. I'm on the phone, you know. I haven't written. I'm talking to you. Isn't that better than writing, Ma? I suppose so. I said, Mom, well, here, I'm talking to you. Say something to you. All right. I'm talking now. You want me to sit down on the phone and start typing a letter so you can hear the typewriter going? Is that what you want? What? Don't be silly. All right, Mother, I will not be silly. It's good to talk to you, Ma. You know, have you ever, in your own head, you know, you turn off, you say, well, I'm going to talk about pleasant things. Gee, it's really nice out here, Ma. We're having wonderful weather out here. You know, it's 55 degrees, the sun is shining, and it's really nice. How's it out there? The roof of the garage blew off. Oh, jeez. Well, that's nice, Ma. You needed a new roof all along, right? Saves all the problem, you know, having some come and take it off and all that stuff. Yes, but it's been raining, you know, for 3 weeks here. Well, Ma, you don't go out anyway. You stay in the house. What difference does it make? All my irises are dead. Oh. Okay, Ma. Well, gee, you know, Mom, how's Aunt Min? Same. Her knee's bothering her. Oh. Okay, Mom. Well, gee, it's good to talk to you, Mom. I'm feeling good. I'm really feeling good. And then she implies that you're lying to her. Oh? You'll say, yes, I'm really feeling good, Ma. I'm feeling good. Have you ever, just because of sheer nervousness, you're telling somebody you're feeling good, all of a sudden you're hit with a fit of coughing. Excuse me, Ma. Brack. Oh, you're feeling good. Well, I'll tell you this. If you don't go see a doctor, I'm going to come out there myself and see that you do. But, Ma, I'm feeling fine. I'm feeling really good, Ma.
Ha, 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 ha
That's enough. Don't give him too much there. That's easy, Ron. You want to leave him. Demanding more. You want to leave with their tongues hanging out, you know. Yelling and hollering, oh, God, more, more, more. Just remember, leaking faucets gather no acorns, buddy. And nevertheless, in the middle of all this, involved discussion with this telephone call home, I just happened to, bring that up. I said, hey, Ma, trying to make conversation. I said, Mom, you remember when I used to say that your whole life was changed, if you're a person, and I presume most of us are, And she always says, oh, you're so funny. I said, well, Ma, come on, I'm not trying to be funny. If your mother was frightened by something before you were born, your whole future, your whole way of being, your whole personality has changed from that day on. The person, the kid, see? Not the mother, the kid. She said, yes. So, well, Ma, what, did anything frighten you before I was born, Well, I hadn't thought of that for a long time. And I said, well, Ma, I'm just curious. Have you ever asked your mother something like that? I mean, I said, Mom, really serious. Tell me, did anything frighten you before I was born? Well, now that you mention it, yes. I said, you mean you can remember what it was? Oh, yes, of course. I said, well, Mom, would you mind telling me what it was? Oh, it was very stupid. I said, what was something stupid frightened you? She says, yes, it was a soldering iron. Boing. My mother was frightened by a soldering iron. By a soldering iron. You know, it was like somebody had just raised a curtain and the light came in. Bum, ba-dum, bum. Yeah, you know what they call, there's a term in psychology called the aha experience. And you know what is it, the aha experience? Well, it's just what it sounds like, this is supposed to come to people in the middle of an analysis. See, they're laying there on the old couch, there on the old Castro, and their feet are sticking out there, and Dr. Guberman is walking around, stroking his beard with his little clipboard, and he's asking you questions. He says, Vet, would you please tell me now, in the last session we was having, you was telling me about how you was climbing on that fence, and you was talking to all them kids, and had this terrible thing, and you could not come to tell me what it was. Now tell me what. And you say, Dr. Guberman, golly, I can't get my head back into those. I have to get back in the mood. Let's see. I was climbing a fence, and there was this big fat kid. And oh God, yes! At that point, of course, he squirts you with the fire extinguisher, and runs out and gets water and pours it on your head. And you've had an aha experience. Now, what happened on the fence? Well, I had no idea what happened on the fence. That's your own aha experience, you see. That's between the patient and the doctor. And I am not going to interrupt that very precious and
very, very solemn vow that the doctor has sworn never to reveal what his patient tells him in the cloistered circle. So I'm not going to say anything about it. However, I will tell you, though, that the aha experience is a continual one that keeps popping. You get smaller ahas than bigger ones. Now, sometimes you have a really big one, and at that point, it can destroy you. I mean, it's like walking down the street. You know, a lot of guys, it's like Archie Bunker. Now, you know Archie. You've seen Archie. You know, Archie walks around, and Archie is perfectly sure that everything that he thinks is absolutely correct and right. And any right-thinking person would understand that. You agree? This is Archie's whole thrust. I mean, how many times have you heard him say, all right, meathead! Come on, stupid! Any dumb guy can... all right, he never has any problem, believing firmly. In fact, he doesn't have any problem at all in that respect. He does believe firmly that any right person would think the way he thinks. Well, now, It would be very discouraging. In fact, more than discouraging, it would be destroying for Archie to walk down a street one day. The sun is just right. The cabs are going by. And, you know, all day long, he's talking about what he calls, dingbats. Somebody's walking around saying, "Oh, that dingbats," you know. And he sees a bunch of people demonstrating. He says, "Look at that dingbats." All right, then he walks down the street a ways, you know, and he sees a bunch of other people, you know, they're carrying a sign, "Oh, dingbats, everybody look." And then all of a sudden, without any warning, as he's about to step off a curb, who knows how you get an aha experience. Maybe a cab comes too close to him, or somebody throws an egg or something, and he gets, you know, gets winged. All of a sudden, in the middle of all that, he's yelling about dingbats. Suddenly, something hits him and says, "You are a dingbat!" He has said it to himself. He is the ultimate dingbat. Which reminds me, this is WOR, New York. No connection. Oh, no. No, no, not at all. No connection. Oh, no. Oh, well, you know, as I said earlier here in this epic 3-4 weeks ago, you know, back when he's doing that show there, it seems... No, I'll tell you one thing about... You know, time is relative. It really is. You've heard this so many times, you know. In fact, the other day in the New York Times crossword puzzle, they had a word defined. It says the fourth dimension, four-letter word. Well, most people think it's a rock group, you know. Actually, it's the fifth dimension that's a rock group. What's the fourth dimension? Well, the fourth dimension is time. And we're swimming in a sea of it. Now, time is not consistent, though. That's the problem with it. It's the one dimension that is not consistent. In short, time has shallows. If you can imagine time as a sea, it has shallows and it has depths. And what is a shallow? Well, all right. Have you ever noticed that when something really great is happening, it seems to go by in like a millisecond. Have you noticed that when you arrive at this fantastic resort for your vacation, and you got 2 weeks, it seems like just as you're taking your socks out of your bag, you are putting your dirty socks back in the bag. Incredible. Well, that's because you're in the shallow water of time in that vast lake, and it goes by so damn fast, you can't even see it happening. Now, on the other hand, when you're in the depths of time, when the water's really deep, it goes on infinitely. In fact, 10 minutes can last forever. For example, you're sitting in a dentist chair, right? And he comes boring down at you with that bit. See, he says, "This'll just take a couple of minutes." And the smoke starts coming out of your ears. It seems to go on forever. And you can't believe it, you know. Here's this guy looming over you with the lights and all that going, and the thing keeps going, "Ee!" More smoke comes out of your ears. "Wee!" And he says, "Hold on a minute." And he reaches over, he takes about 10 of those nut picks. And, you know, he's pulling the main nerve right out of your brain. And, you know, he says, "You know, we can't really get at this with the Novocaine. We're just, it's going to hurt a little bit." You know, it goes all the way down to your shoes. And the whole thing, finally, when you're released from the chair and you're bathed in sweat and you're shaking, have you ever felt a great sense of gratitude for the dentist for letting you off? You know, you want to cling to his knees and say, "Oh, thank you, thank you. I'm glad you let me out again." Well, you can't believe it. You look at your watch. You have been in the chair for 7.5 minutes. And they're running the next victim in, kicking and screaming, clinging to the doors as they bring him in chains. Well, that's correct. Yeah, he's clawing at the, you know, his thumbnail is already gone because he's clinging to the wallpaper. Well, all right. Again, it's a time business. See, time is like a vast sea with shallows and with depths. And when you're a kid, of course, going to school, 4 years, for example, in high school seems to stretch on forever. Now, for any of you who graduated from high school, you notice I don't say all of you. I said, for any of you who graduated from high school, you look back on it and it seemed to go by, you can't even remember hardly. It went by maybe 8-9 milliseconds. Bump, ba-dum, bump. Well, you're in the midst of the depths of the vast, enormous ocean, the abyss. You're in the abyss, the deeps at that point. Now, why I brought this up is, you know, it's really, speaking of time, time does move, you know, really. And we have been getting all kinds of letters, and this is by way of a small, brief announcement in lieu of letters. We've been getting letters and phone calls and stuff here about when we are going to appear in the next couple of weeks locally here, various benefit shows and so on I do. Well, the Princeton show this year, which I do every year at Princeton to benefit WPRB, the radio station there, will be the 4th of June at 9 p.m. in Alexander Hall. That's Princeton this year is the 4th of June at 9 p.m. So call the radio station there, WPRB, and they can give you information on how to get your tickets and so on. Now, the next show that I'm going to be doing, I'll be doing a show at Rutgers, and that's the 15th of April. Very quickly, I haven't been to Rutgers in a long time. Rutgers over in New Brunswick, you know? Boy, that's... since the time... When I last played Rutgers, they had their basketball team was strictly in the Little League. Oh, this year, man, they were all right. Mean. You know, I was torn. I must say, I was torn in my loyalties there. Because, you know, I went to Indiana. Yes. And I should be for Indiana. And on one hand, I was. You know, after all, it was Indiana. But on the other hand, Rutgers. I guess it's terrible to admit you're getting to be a turncoat. But I didn't know which one to yell for. But that was a hell of a... What a game. You know, in fact, that all the way to the end there, that NCAA tournament. But anyway, Rutgers did real good this year. One defeat, right? Two defeats. Yeah, that's right, the last game, that's correct. But they went all through the season. But Rutgers, New Brunswick, will be there Thursday the 15th at 8:30 at the Ledge. And if you'd like to call them about tickets, it's area code 201. And the number, I'll give it only once, 932-7426. I told you once. You blew it already. All right, I'll give it again. It's 932-7426. That's New Jersey area, right? You know, it's funny though, when you talk about you know, basketball. I don't know why I'm on the subject of basketball, but basketball has to be one of the most exciting spectator sports there is. I mean, have you ever really gotten into that? And I mean, there's very few things more exciting than a last minute drive by a basketball club that's down 8 points with 4 minutes to go. And they suddenly get hot. And the other team gets panicky. You know, suddenly these guys are hitting from the outside, you know. some guy that hasn't been able to even keep the ball from hitting his own shoes, you know, when he's dribbling out there, all of a sudden turns into an incredible maniac. And he starts hitting these fall-away flip shots. Now he's falling out of bounds. And whap! Gee, whoo. Oh, that really is it's one of the worst things that can happen to your morale if you're playing on the other club. There's no way to stop some of those shots. Do you agree? And that's an almost perfect game, I think, basketball, if you really love action. And, of course... Maybe some of you don't know. You know, there's a myth around here, and I must say, a lot of the New York writers, Larry Merchant and so on, they love to think that New York, that this is a New York street game. They keep talking about basketball as a New York street game, but actually, and it may be, in one way. But let me tell you something else. A lot of you people probably have not seen Indiana farmyard games. Now, see, this is something you don't get out of here. You don't realize that there are many schools out throughout Indiana and Iowa, particularly Indiana and Illinois too. But Indiana is the major hotbed of basketball out there, and for many of the same reasons, you know, the reason the kid plays street basketball here is it doesn't take any space, You don't have to have... You don't even need two teams. All you need is another kid. I mean, one-on-one basketball. You could even play yourself. I mean, it's great to, you know, dribble around out there and practice hook shots. And I have done it for hours. It's just hours. You just dribble around, you flip those hook shots, you know. And every kid I knew when I was a kid, if he had any kind of a backyard at all, had a bounding board up on the garage or on a tree somewhere right next to the house. And what you do is you go down to... In fact, one of our projects in shop was to build a bounding board. You know, you go home and you build this thing, you put it up in the backyard. And the bounding board was behind our house until the day I left to go to the Army. And incidentally, I remember one time coming home from the Army on a 3-day pass, and it's winter time, and, you know, it's snow out there. And I came home, and there was nobody else around. I was the only guy, you know, all the other guys were in the Army and that. And I came home. What do you think I did? In the middle of the winter, I went out there wearing my GI shoes, and in the snow and in the ice out there, I was shooting free shots. I went out in the back. Now this kind of madness is what makes basketball. Now, when you drive throughout Indiana, for example, if you go down to southern Indiana, particularly southern Indiana, and you drive along U.S. 41, one of the big cross-state highways that go all the way down through the state, and you go past, you know, it seems like millions of miles of nothing but cold cornfields in the wintertime. And then along comes the house. You see the house, see, of this farm. And there's the house, and you see a couple of barns and so on. Invariably, you will see behind the house and behind the barn, you'll see that bounding board. Now, why do the farmers play? Well, because, like city kids, it's hard to raise a team. You know, you can't get the 11 kids on each side like to play football. And so two or three farm kids will be back there in the backyard playing basketball. Have you ever, you know that one of the major sports has not yet hit the East, and it's been a major sport throughout the Midwest, particularly Iowa, for the past, as long as I can remember, has been girl basketball. Oh, I mean, they'll draw 15,000 wild screaming fans. And these girls will really play wild basketball. And in some schools, it's gotten to the point now where some of the girls' teams that play are so good that the boys' team is just like a little extracurricular activity. You know, they just sort of fool around. But I want to tell you, one of the most dramatic things that I ever saw happen in the world of sports, you know, every year, Indiana has it's an absolute unparalleled state tournament. Now, you may not know about it here because everything in the East is done by sections and so on, and it's kind of muted, and you just see a little bit in the back of a newspaper. But in Indiana, beginning about this time of the year, it's just about now beginning, you know, just in the late... it coincides really with the playoffs, the ABA or the NFL or the NBA playoff. About this time of the year, the state, listen for a minute. The state is divided into things called sectionals. Now, there's hundreds of sectionals. And every school that is in the Indiana High School Basketball or High School Athletic Association is in this sectional. Now, no matter what size you are, you may be a high school with like 200 kids, or you may also be a high school with, say, 4,000. You're in this sectional. Well, you can see, obviously, that a high school that has only 200 kids is in real bad trouble when they're playing some big industrial high school from, say, up northern Indiana, where the average height of the freshman class is 6'9". You know, and there are over 700 guys come out for basketball. And that's actually the truth. So what happens is this. They have, over a weekend, they have this giant, all over the state at the same time, sectional tournament. It begins on, say, Friday. And it's all done by draw. You just don't know who you're going to draw. And if you're from this big high school, you may draw this little tiny school, see, as your first game. Of course, they wipe them out. But that doesn't matter. The whole school comes to the sectional. See, it's the beginning. See, and it's just a wild scene. And they'll play three games in a day in this gym. See, so here, and it's huge. There may be 15,000 people, screaming fans. Well, by the end of that first weekend, obviously every sectional has one winner that has, you know, won. And all the other teams are eliminated. That's the end of their season. Well, then it's beginning to build up. See, if your school has won the sectional, you know, that's pretty wild. Then the whole week goes by, and the next thing, they play the regional. Now, the state is divided up into 16 regions. You got it? No, it's 32 regions. That's it. 32 regions. Now, you're playing schools now that are from way far off comparatively. Schools you never even hear much about except during regional. And there are teams that have lethal reputations. And suddenly you're playing them. See, up to this point, you've been playing old friendly schools, you know. Suddenly, in comes the Frankfurt Hot Dogs. They get great names. The LaPorte Slicers. And you know, the Frankfurt Hot Dogs, when they used to they'd come and they'd play in our gym, the Frankfurt Hot Dogs would have these great-looking jerseys with a great big hot dog on the front. The Frankfurt Hot Dogs, the LaPorte Slicers. How about the Horace Mann Blue Devils? And these teams would come into, yeah, they'd come into town. How about this one, the Whiting Oilers? They come from right in the middle of all the oil refining district. The
Roosevelt Rough Riders
would come in. And so after that, this weekend is unbelievable. They broadcast it on television all over the place, and they fantastic regional. And finally, after the weekend, there are 32 regional winners. Now, if your school has gone that far, you're out of your bird. You've won maybe 8 or 9 consecutive ball games. You know, remember that. Well, the next week after that comes the semifinals, and this is really dramatic. This is the real bippy. By this time, it costs you like, if you can get a ticket is worth like maybe $20 just to see one game, you know, if you can get in. And so the battle is tremendous. After this battle, the semifinals are broadcast all over, and then you hear about these really lethal teams downstate that win. For example, Indianapolis South has always taken their sectional and their regional. And there are just, at that point, 8 teams left. 8. You got it? And the state is just going crazy. And on that last weekend, the finals are played in the field house, this tremendous field house in Indianapolis. And it's a tremendous field. It's bigger than Madison Square Garden. It seats maybe 25, 30,000 people. And no way you can get a ticket to this. Getting a ticket to the state finals in Indiana is like getting a ticket for life to all the World Series games in the future. I mean, it ain't going to happen. Well, all the big used car dealers are down there, you know, all the Buick dealers and all the high rollers are down there. The kids, no way, you know, but the excitement is incredible. Well, of course, by the end of that weekend, that last final game is just unbelievable. And most of the players that played on that Indiana NCAA team that won this year went through that thing when they were in high school. That is a pressure cooker you wouldn't believe. And incidentally, I'll never forget the time when I was a kid, a school came from southern Indiana, believe it or not, had 27 pupils in the school. And they won the state championship. It's one of the great, and you know how they did it? They did it with the most fantastic slow break you ever saw in your life. These guys would work the ball for 10 minutes before taking a shot, and they never missed. They only took a shot when it was open, man, and defense, you couldn't believe. They were winning games like 27-26. You know, they were playing some team that was averaging 95 points a game. All of a sudden, they came up against this team. Threw their whole game off, and it's a historic moment in Indiana. I mean, talk about your miracle Braves. And the Dodgers that won the pennant in the last swing, or the Giants, or whoever it was, with Billy Thompson's homer. Wow. You didn't know this about Indiana, did you? That's the yearly madness, and right now they're entering it. And all over the state, kids are sleeping in restless beds, tossing, late at night, trying to figure out how to get a ticket to the regional. Yeah, this is WOR New York. Stay tuned for In Conversation.
And from April 8th, 1976, as originally aired on WOR in New York, Gene Shepherd talking a little bit about Indiana high school basketball. And we heard Shep mention a little bit about that year's NCAA basketball tournament, where he was torn between Rutgers, which is in New Jersey, near where Shep lived and worked, and Indiana University from his home state. Both of those teams were undefeated going into that year's NCAA tournament. That was the last time two teams made it to the Final Four undefeated. IU, of course, ran the table, beating Michigan to win the national championship that year, the first time two teams from the same conference played in a national championship game. Rutgers' fortunes, however, not as good as IU's. They ended up losing both of their games in the Final Four, first to Michigan, and eventually they lost the consolation game, back when they played consolation games, to UCLA. Also, just to note, a bit of an exaggeration there from Shep on the seating capacity at Hinkle Fieldhouse. He said 25 or 30,000 people would show up for the state finals. At its largest, Hinkle Fieldhouse's seating capacity was about 15,000. So we may give Shep the benefit of the doubt there, thinking that maybe he combined both sessions, the semifinals and the final, to get that figure. But Hinkle Fieldhouse, not quite as big as Shep led the New Yorkers to believe there. Well, we do have a few minutes left for a Shep Short, and this is a clip from a few years back, WOR celebrating their anniversary on the air, and they played some clips from a number of their past talents, including Shep. And in this story, Shep tells us about an unfortunate run-in he had with a peacock in Florida.
His magic was difficult to fathom and impossible to describe, but if you listened to the first few minutes of his program, you were hooked. You'd follow him through twists and turns, through elaborate word pictures, and apparently irrelevant digressions to the very end of his marathon narrative. No one's shaggy dog stories were shaggier, but then no one else's were as much fun either. Here in the brief portion of the Classic Radio Weekend left to us today is a sample of his art.
Holy smokes, I'm getting Radio Hanoi here through my cans. Gee whiz. La-pa-da. Coming in loud and clear, they're playing rock and roll, friends. I forgot. All right, really. Just maintain an even keel out there. There we go. Is Flushing still out there tonight? What a great name for a town. Well, that's kind of descriptive, though. Bring it up there, Baker. That's it, gang. There we go. All right, that's enough, Larry. That's enough here. We have a little alarming thing that I'm just going to have to bring to your attention. This is one of the greatest news notes that I've read in a long time. Very significant, too. You don't often hear much out of the state of Washington. I mean, that's a state, and a lot of people have doubted even its existence. There's another state that I have for years felt is just a myth, one of those things that have grown. Has anyone ever actually been in Wyoming? No, I've heard about it, but I've actually been there. I suppose, you know, there's probably a place. Of course, there are those who believe in Oz, as a matter of fact, but we have a note here from Washington, and I'm going to read it to you exactly the way it came in over the news wire. It's UPI, so it's very official. Cutliff Starkvogel. Cutliff Starkvogel came out of the brush yesterday to report that black bears have taken to watching television through his cabin window. What's more, he says, if the Bruins don't like the program, says Starkvogel, they ripped the cedar shingles off the outside of his house. Starkvogel, a woodsman, freelance shellfish consultant, and backwoods philosopher, is a... This is a UPI. I'm not inventing this. What the devil is a shellfish consultant? Hey, Snarkvogel! Just thought of a question about a shellfish, but then I forgot it. A backwoods philosopher is afraid the habit might ruin the Bruin social structure locally. Snarkvogel explains that he can only get two channels on his TV set, and sometimes the bears don't like either program. There just ain't no satisfying some bears, said Snarkvogel, and that is a direct quote. However, I'm walking along the street, and I had just come out of the show, and I had just made corporal. I remember that vividly. And this old coot came along, and he's a southern type, Florida type old coot. And he came along there, and he stopped me. He didn't want any money or anything like that. He just looked me in the eye and says, where are you going? I said, well, I'm going down the street. He says, so am I. And so he said, why don't you go with me? Well, it was one of the rare times in my life that I actually went with, you know, this old coot. I had nothing to lose. So I'm walking down the street with this old guy. We're looking in the hardware store. And a lot of great stuff looking in the hardware store. They had bottle cap units so you can bottle your own stuff. Because down in the South, they do a lot of bottle capping. And we're looking at bottle cappers and the rakes and stuff like that. And then we walk on a little bit further, and we stand and look in the Montgomery Ward store for a while. But we walked on a little bit further, and then we finally got out to his house. Now I want to describe a scene here to you that is so unreal to me that even when I think about it, I kind of doubt, and yet I know it happened. I kind of doubt what I went through and what I saw. This guy lived exactly the way Robinson Crusoe is reportedly to have lived. He had this old shack out in the middle of a mango swamp. Now, have you ever been in a mango swamp? You don't know what a mango swamp is? Well, that's where they have mangoes, and they smell to high heaven. I'll tell you, when the mangoes are in full heat, and they're doing whatever mangoes do when they're hanging there in the sun, you can hardly stand it. Your eyes water, and it's tremendous. And they had all kinds of flowers growing all over, and he was deep in the heart. And you don't have to go very far out of a town in Florida to get deep in the heart of something. And we're deep in the heart of the sand and the grubbles and the palmettos and the Spanish moss and all that jazz. And it is a low house that was made out of Sinclair 5-gallon oil drums that he had hammered flat and had put together and had built on cinder block. We just lay in there, flat and low. And we walked past the heron, we walked past all the raccoons. And little did I realize I'm about to get one of the great educational experiences which has forever remained right in my skull there. And it's made me a little bit afraid of Ilka Sommer. It's made me worry a little bit about Shirley MacLaine and Audrey Hepburn and a lot of people. Because it's made me suspect beauty. The beauty quite often contains something in it that is not exactly the same thing that you find deep down inside of the great jawbreaker of life. You know, that sweet little seed that you're always hunting for when you go through layer after layer and it changes color. Well, you know, it could be paralleled with life. And you always expect that what you're going to get in the middle of that great big fat jawbreaker of life, you're going to get this succulent caraway seed, maybe, or some kind of a thing that's even better than all the layers. But what would you do if you got down to the inner seed there and you sucked off the final layer and it exploded? Blew your molars right out the back of your head. How would you like that, huh? Just, you know, it's a rhetorical question. I don't want anybody to call up and say, I'd like that. Well, you can have your own masochism, friend. You can find your own scene. We all got a hang up. And, you know, yours isn't the same probably as anybody else's, so don't come crying on my shoulder. I ain't got time for that. However, we're walking through these possums, and I could smell the bougainvillea. It's beautiful. The sun is beating down. And he wanted to show me real life, what Florida life was really like. And the sand is hot, and you could see the possums running around under the porch, and you could smell those. Let me tell you, mangoes, when they are ripe, there's several kinds of mangoes. I think there's one called Hart's mango, like that. Yeah, Hart's Pango mango, all kinds of names. And then there's one called the vinegar mango. There's also one called the turpentine mango. And if you ever get tangled up with one of those, Dad, your tongue turns green. awful. And so we're walking along by his shack there, and I see up on the roof there, sitting right directly above me. Oh, I'd say about 6-7 feet above me, just hanging on that roof. He had a roof made out of kind of a flat pieces of pine and shingles cut. And it was a beautiful little place, really, in a nutty kind of way, you know, if you like dens. It was a den. And on top of the roof was a peacock. A peacock. Now, peacocks have always been a criterion of beauty, as proud as, or as beautiful as. And this was a big peacock. Now, that's different from a peahen. This was a peacock. This baby had a tail that was 17 feet long. He had two red gimlets for eyes. And he was beautiful. I mean, you know, he had this long, flowing... He's the only guy I ever knew who had a pet peacock. I looked up. I said, peacock, huh? Yes, it's Mrs. Hoo. And we walked on around the side of the house, and this peacock watched me, see? And its beak was moving a little bit, and it went, ah, ah. That's the way a peacock goes. Ah. Well, I turned my back on that son of a gun, and that's where I made my mistake. It's when you turn your back on these things. I turned my back on that son of a gun, and I heard behind me just one short, quick, ah, like that. And the next thing I knew, 427 pounds of beauty was hanging on my shoulder blades and tearing my shirt to ribbons and pecking at the back of my neck. Holy smokes, this baby grabbed me, clawed, grabbed my left ear, screaming and yelling. I turned and I grabbed him by the neck and I pushed him off into the weeds. He went, ah, ah, ah! He came tearing back with those two red eyes. 5 minutes later, I'm in front of the show. My shirt torn off the back. Gasser meets me out there and says, holy smokes, where you been? I said, nowhere. You can't tell a guy that you've been attacked by a peacock. My shirt's all ripped up, you know, blood is coming out of my ear, and he says, holy smokes, what kind of a chick did you run into? I played it cool. I said, well, you know, I appeal to that kind. And you know, from that moment on, I had a strange reputation in Company K. But I have never... No, I keep these things to myself. I don't talk about, you know... You just can't tell people about being attacked by a peacock. Or have, like the other day. Listen to this one now. You think, here, I have a note here from England. You know, they got this medical system where guys get, you know, false teeth free. Here's a guy reported that an emu ate his hearing aid. Do you think anybody believes him? No. Oh, yeah? I wouldn't put it past him. I do not trust anything. Peacocks, nothing. Possums, the whole scene. Just keep low. Give them a low silhouette, Dad. And, you know.
Gene Shepherd with the story of the peacock that got the better of him here on Sundays with Shep. And that is going to do it for this week's edition of Sundays with Shep. As always, we love your feedback. If you have any comments, show requests, or maybe memories of listening to Shep, or maybe you knew the man in person, we'd love to hear about those. Drop us an email. The email address is sundayswithshep@gmail.com. Coming up next week are space aliens, light years away, just now picking up those first Shep broadcasts. Shep gets a little scientific with us. Also, Shep and his friends gather around for a marathon game of Monopoly. That's right, Monopoly. That story next week on Sundays with Shep. Until that time, I'm Ryan Priest. For everyone here at the Lakeshore, 89.1 FM, thanks for joining us. Have a great week, and we will see you back here next Sunday with Shep.